Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 11th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Boy, I can't wait to hear this story.
I know, I actually got out in the wild.
Finally get to talk about poker that we played.
And I thought we were going to have two items because we were supposed to have our home game, but the home game didn't happen this week. So, but we'll more to talk about in coming weeks, I guess, whenever we get that home game together. But I actually got out in a real live poker room, Chris, and played real live poker. It was the first live tournament I played, I think, in 20 months is what I figured out, which is crazy to think,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely insane. I played a couple like Poker Stars freebie tournaments since and that, but that's really about it. It's a couple of sit and goes. So for a couple sit and goes in 20 months to finally get around and play a real tournament was fantastic. So
that's great.
Really enjoyed literally every minute of there. I was let me back up. So one of our local poker rooms here in Tampa, TGD. The TGT Poker, which we talked about on the show last week, put together this mixed game series, which is fantastic. And so I played the Omaha 8 Stud 8 event. I was planning on playing a couple more, but things didn't work out. But I did get to play the one, and it was fun. And as soon as I walk in, Chris, I see the poker room manager. He's like, "Hey, where you been?" And I'm like, "I know!" And that took a turn to the right, or left, and looked for the ATM, and I saw two of our frequent cruisers, cruisers, and you have to say hi to them. And then I sit down at my table, and there was another one of our cruisers sitting right next to me. And then about an hour into the tournament, and one of our poker dealers from the cruises shows up and late regs and sits at our table. And then, of course, some dealers that I remember back in the day. It's like really going, like, you know, it's been 20 months, but you felt like you're right back in it, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
So that was kind of cool. Finished 14th out of 42, so, you know, no money, so I'm not going to brag at all, but that's not bad. And that was, it was more than 5 hours because the structure was fantastic for a limit tournament. I really thought I played pretty well. So, I was probably fourth or fifth in chips, like five hands before I went out. I mean, that's just things change. But that's just the way it goes. You know, when you don't hit that, when you have four to a low, four to a flush, and four to a straight, and that last card and stud misses every single one of them.
Right? Oh, jeez.
Oh, man, but it was just so good. I'm like, that kind of tournament was great, too, because, you know, the Omaha players were grumpy as they always were.
Yeah.
None of them got happier during COVID. No one could read their stud eight hands. So all the kind of fun stuff was back there as well, too. Not that I wouldn't have wanted to support poker rooms, and I'm glad poker rooms found a way to get open as quickly as they could. But I was never excited about going in and playing with the plexiglass and the gloves and the mask and all that kind of stuff. So I missed all that. So, I mean, really the only thing they still do is when you leave the table, come back, they sanitize your hands, which, you know, one guy at my table was complaining about it. He's like, "I don't know why they're sanitizing our hands, but we don't have to wear a mask." And then the rest of us were like, he's like, "You know, we just walked out of the bathroom, man." I'm like, the number of people that aren't washing their hands, they really should keep this hand sanitizing thing going on forever. I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. So, you know, it was good to be back. And like I said, it was good to miss the crazy Mad Max year of poker with all the the protocols and stuff too.
I was going to make a comment that, you know, finishing 14th out of 42 is pretty good for being rusty. And then I thought, well, they're all rusty. So this is pretty much where Scott would have finished, even if everybody was top on their game, I think. He still would have finished 14th out of 42. Right? But it's good to play.
The good thing about these mixed series, too, I guess, is, well, I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, bad if you're trying to win money, which I guess is the goal, right? But it attracts mostly players who know how to play these games. I mean, there was a couple of folks there that, I mean, there weren't any clueless players. Like, sometimes I'll see in the horse tournament, like, back in the day when we used to play it, we were like, all right, what's the game? All right, tell me, explain to me to again. I'm like, why did you put $240 in this tournament when you don't even know how to play the game? So we didn't have any of those, but we did have I had one guy at the table. In fact, the guy that knocked me out, I had him dead. He was in. He had like two big blinds, and so I got him all in pre-flop, and he flopped a joint on me, and I'm like, I never caught up him. So he kept. And then he just won like four hands in a row after that, right? And then built
his deck.
Yeah. But he was complaining the entire time. He's like, man, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm like, you know, when you guys play No Limit Hold'em tournaments, that's what I feel like right now. Like, what am I doing in this? My friends are going to want me to come back tomorrow. Now, I don't know if I'm going to come back. This is just painful. But that was like really the only guy. Everybody else knew what they're doing. So, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah. So, they know their market, too. I mean, to have that many players in one poker room that knew what they were doing, you know, 42 mixed in a small poker room like that, that's a huge thing.
That was a Thursday day tournament. So,
crazy.
There, right after I finished the show.
Yeah.
Ran the show and drove out. So, that was for the day tournament. I didn't hear about the later tournaments, how they did or how the main event drew, but all the tournaments leading up to the one I was in made the guarantee. Now, they weren't crazy aggressive guarantees, but they were solid guarantees for a mixed game series. Unfortunately, the night before was, I forget which one that was, but somebody hit a some car hit a generator or a transformer.
Oh.
And they lost power, and it forced them to do a 16-way chop.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, I mean, solid numbers. I mean, again, you're not going to pack the room with these kind of tournaments, but the people that are going to come in are really going to appreciate that you're offering them, and that's what I told JD before I left. I'm like, you know, hey, hope you keep doing these, and he said he would. So
cool.
I'll be back out there. So good day,
JD. I forgot about JD.
Yeah,
he's cool.
All right, things are definitely getting back to normal in the poker tournament world, not just because I'm playing, but the World Poker Tour has announced its 2021 schedule. WPT will have 7 North America events this year, kicking off this week at the Seminole Hard Rock right here in Tampa, Florida, and ending at the Bellagio in Las Vegas in December. And also included is a special $25,000 buy-in, invitation-only heads-up event that will be broadcast on Twitch, YouTube, and other services.
Not bad. I mean, it's really just a stone's throw away from being normal again, for poker at least.
It really seems like it, yeah. And like every day, we're going to skip our little reopenings thing this week because there's no news to share for this week. But you know, I'm getting almost daily emails from folks saying, hey, I was playing in this room and it's now 9-handed and it's no longer 7-handed, or the plexiglass is down, or
right,
this other stuff. So, I mean, it really, at this point, I mean, we are blessed here in the United States that if you want a vaccine, you can get it. So, I mean, there's really no reason not to be back to normal for folks. So, it's kind of weird because this whole thing, we never knew when it was going to end, right? Because we didn't think it was going to end, right?
Yeah.
And now we're getting to a point where it kind of feels like it's to an end, at least for most people, and they feel like they're getting back. So that's good to see.
Yeah, it's the, hey, if you want to be vaccinated, you can be vaccinated, and if you don't, well, now it's on you if something happens, because we're easily offering it to you, and we're all vaccinated. So if you don't want it, that's your choice. But if something happens to you, it was your choice. So everyone's saying, okay, you're not getting on board. We're moving forward without you. And then, you know, that's how it's going to be. So if you get sick, then you get sick. And if you don't get sick, you don't get sick. And it's your choice. So everyone's doing what they want to do now at this point, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's good. The mentality of most businesses now is like, all right, it's time for us to start making money again. Doing things the right way. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about I read a story yesterday about the economy. You know, they were worried that it would never get back to what it was pre-COVID, but now they're saying it's going to surpass it and blow it away by the end of the year, which we all kind of thought might happen. because all those businesses now are going to reopen again, and all those people are going to come back to work, and everyone's going to want to go out to eat and go shopping and do their things. And, you know, it was I expected that to happen, but, you know, they're saying everything's going to be back to normal. And that's the first indication, too, is that, you know, the economy's booming, then, okay, you know things are getting back. So it's good. I mean, it feels good.
So good luck at those WPT events, folks.
I wonder how many of our listeners will play in a WPT main event.
The main event, yeah, that's that. That'd be
sure. Undercards, sure, but main event.
Absolutely. All right, the anti-slap motions against Mike Postol, who has been accused of cheating in live stream poker games, are starting to hit the courts, with Postol last month ordered to pay Todd Whittles nearly $27,000 in legal fees. And this month, Veronica Brill's anti-slap case will be heard. Postol's latest legal filing was rejected by the court because it was not formatted correctly. Additionally, Brill this week posted a video interview with Postol's ex-wife. One interesting nugget was his ex-wife mentioning the name of the producer of a documentary about the saga, David Room, who she claims is friends with a former business associate of Postol's.
So why is that interesting? Tell the Antiup Nation.
Let me start with that point, too. So I didn't want to put too much on here about the ex-wife video because man or woman, divorces are ugly, right? So, you know, you never know what you're hearing, whether it's definitely one side, right? So, mm-hmm. So if you're interested in more of the salacious details, obviously you can find this video or the articles about it and get all that stuff. But what we've been all waiting for, I think, is this blockbuster film, a movie that Mike has been talking was going to come that's just going to blow the world up, right?
Right.
And it still hasn't dropped yet. So I'm just curious whether this is the guy doing it now. So, I mean, before we didn't know, so maybe we're a little bit closer. Now, of course, you know, maybe it's not, but I just thought that was interesting.
Oh, okay.
Well, we'll see. So
lots of, is there something that Postol can do when it's all said and done to avoid all of these legal fees and all this stuff, or are they just going to like attach his pay to whatever he does for a living someday for the rest of his life?
So the anti-slap for folks is essentially when you accuse somebody of something and then they can sue you back when you don't prove the case for legal fees. And Whittles, I think, was asking for close to $60,000, and the judge only gave him $27,000. So we'll see what happens with Veronica's case coming up, and there are other ones. I mean, pretty much everybody that he included in that $330 million lawsuit that he eventually dropped that incurred legal fees can and should be and probably will be suing them for it. So and it looks like they're going to get them. I mean, if it goes like this first case, it sounds like they'll all get it. They may not get what they're asking for, but they'll get some, right? Or at least the judgment for it. So then what happens out of the judgment is they have to collect on it. So, you know, it doesn't seem like he has a ton of money here.
Right.
can't find an attorney anymore. So you can't collect from somebody that doesn't have it. So I think it gets into kind of like that O.J. Simpson stuff, right, where, you know, yeah, I mean, eventually you start collecting money from you start collecting based on what he makes. But if he doesn't make anything, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when O.J. was going through after the civil thing, they were like selling his Heisman trophy and they got the money for it, you know. So maybe they'll be going through Mike's personal belongings and saying, okay, we can sell this or that. Or, I don't know.
Possible. I guess we'll see. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay, any updates? Pates, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines, with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop to buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We're going to complete O'Malley's move today. This will be part one. We'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing in a $1, $3 no-limit hold'em cash game at a casino we regular. The game is eight-handed. The casino allows a straddle from any position. Action follows regularly, with the straddler acting last pre-flop and then in turn on the following streets. We've moved our seat to be to the left of a maniac who straddles every hand. The maniac straddles from the cutoff, the blinds post, it's folded all the way around to us on the button, and we look down at the ace of clubs, king of clubs. We bought in for 300, lost 150, and then added on another 300. So we're in the game for 450, but currently sit with 1400. It's been a good night. We make it $55 to go. The blinds fold, but the maniac calls, leaving him with about 700. The pot is 110, and the flop is the 8 of clubs, 7 of spades, deuce of hearts. The maniac leads out for 100. We totally miss this flop, but I think raising and folding is extremely weak in this scenario. Plus, he has been known to slow down if he has absolutely nothing after a flop bet. We call. The pot is 310, and the turn is the queen of clubs. Our opponent thinks briefly and shoves. Yikes. What's the move?
Ouch, tough spot. Also the kind of spot maniacs love to get us into. We always think they're full of BS, but they do get hands from time to time. So our decision now is whether we think this is a complete air bet, which is about all we can beat, and if not, whether it's worth $700 to hit our club, or maybe an ace or a king to win. Very hard decision to make not sitting in the game, because you need to stare your opponent down. Absent that ability, I'm probably folding.
I'm going to take a different approach here and say, how do we even call that flop bet, really, much less a turn bet for that amount? I just don't see it. I mean, it's sort of fit or fold. I mean, you can go on another level and hope because you have two overs and whatever, but you were bet into, right? I mean, we were bet into for 100, and I'm like, okay, if we don't believe the maniac, we can call and float, but now you're looking at a huge shove for like, what, 700 or something like that? It's like, I don't see any way to call this turn bet on one card to come draw, and you don't even know what he has. You know, you draw unless it's the nut flush that you hit. You know, you don't even know if what you hit's going to be good. So I don't think I could have mustered up the call of 100 on the flop. I mean, yeah, if you break it down to a smaller game and a smaller amount, but this is a 1-3 game, you know what I mean? And I don't know. The guy basically bets pot and you call with air, hoping to hit one of your overs or pick up a flush draw. And then he shoves on you, which is a perfect move to do because he knows that you don't have anything at this point. He's trying to force you out. So I couldn't possibly make that call on the turn either. So I'm definitely folding. All right, here comes part two.
Hello again. Why call the flop just to fold to a turn bet? I'll tell you why. One, this opponent doesn't usually double barrel bluff. And two, if we had hit our ace king, I would snap call here. I can't put him on a set unless he has me on exactly aces or kings. I don't think a set bets pot on the flop. So, what could he have here? It really, really feels like 10-9, but I don't want to gamble in this case. We fold. Our opponent surprises us by showing the jack of spades, jack of hearts. Nice hand, sir. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, if I call the flop bet here, am I supposed to call the turn? I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, absolutely no requirement to make this call simply because you made that flop bet, and I think O'Malley explained why. It's not in his opponent's tendencies to bluff twice, and even if he wasn't, we're still sitting with ace high and a flush draw facing a bet for half our healthy stack.
Yeah, I have no problem with the fold. I mean, obviously. It's not about ego and what ifs. It's about making good decisions and money. One street to go for half your stack, and it might, unless it's the club, it might not even be good what you hit anyway. I can't imagine making that call, and it's a good fold on his part, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that flop. I mean, we could debate the flop call all day, all night long, but you know, I don't think it's terrible because you know we had two overs still. But then when we don't hit on that turn, and I don't consider picking up the flush draw hitting. That's when it's time to go. So I don't think they're tied to each other.
Yeah. And I mean, if it was a, you know, generally you're looking at a half to two thirds size of the pot bet, you might make that call. this guy bet pot on you, and you whiffed completely. Completely. You know? Yeah. I mean, I know Gambit, and we always make that joke about the ace-king hands, a drawing hand and all that, but you didn't have a chance to bet out. He bet out into you. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay. And it was a straddle, so it was even more money. I mean, that's just, to me, it's like, all right, 110 bucks in the pot, and the guy bets 100. You know, and there was a rake out of that, so it was probably like $105 in the pot. To me, that I get out of the hand. All right, move on. We raised 55, and we lost, and we missed it. But, yeah, you can also float and hope but he's a maniac. That's the thing. If it's a standard player who just donk bets into you, maybe you can outplay him. But this is a maniac. You have no idea where he is, you know? And it turns out that, I mean, you had to hit your card to win. And I just seems like a big chunk of my stack to call that turn. So I'm glad he folded.
Absolutely. All right. It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations, a podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker trading site. All right, this is going to be fun, Chris. Okay. This comes from Robert Dennison. And I'll start off by saying, hello, I'm Robert Dennison, and I heard on your podcast last week your hand review, a hand submitted by Jerry Haynes. Remember him, Chris?
Yeah, of course.
He said, I will admit I was the villain in that hand that had the king high flush on the turn in position and decided to check, trying to get more value in the river. It was a risk someone could beat me with ace high flush if another suited card came on the river, but I thought that was the only chance to get more money on that hand. Now, that wasn't last week's hand. That was one of the previous hands. But anyhow,
right.
So we just completed 10 great hands from Jerry Haynes, and now we've got a hand from somebody else in that same club.
Okay, cool.
Kind of fun. All right. So he says, anyway, we played again last week, so we play weekly, and this is that home game on pokernow.club. Again, 25-cent, 50-cent blinds. He says, but there's a lot of action pre- and post-flop, and it plays more like a $1, $2 game with a common three bets and very seldom limping to a flop. We were only five-handed at this point, and I was under the gun with the ace of hearts, six of hearts.
Okay, well, he said very seldom people limp, so I don't know if that means that if I did try to limp, I was probably going to get raised and then I'm going to have to spend more money anyway. If that seems to be, you know, the case here, I'm either folding or raising. I am not, you know, and I think folding seems a little tight five-handed with a suited ace. I mean, yeah. I know it's the worst ace possible because you can't make a wheel with it. But if I'm going to play it, it's going to be for a raise because I feel like these guys are going to raise me anyway. Five-handed, suited ace, you know, first to act, might as well. Also, under the gun limps are kind of suspect anyway, even if it's a full table or not. But this case, yeah, we talk about this every week pretty much because we keep talking about Jerry's hand. So we always bring up the fact that if you're playing five-handed, even though you're under the gun, it's really like you're in, you know, what, the hijack or, yeah, the cutoff hijack, whatever. So you're somewhere in the middle of the table. So an A6 suited, you know, I'd probably raise with it, whatever the standard is at this table, 150, whatever, $2, whatever.
Yeah, I think you definitely have to raise here. Folding, I think, is way too tight five-handed with this, and limping is just not a sound move here. So, I mean, you got to put pressure on folks because, you know, we're not going to hit our flush all the time with this, right? So, I mean, we need to force some other hands out that might have a chance to flop something. So, definitely got to put a raise in here. So, all right, right here says I had a buy-in of 100 bucks and was up about 156, and the villain of this hand has me covered with about 165. He says, since I was ahead and I've been trying not to broadcast my strength of my hands by raising this position and allowing the other players to put me on a range, I decided all night to limp in under the gun no matter what my hand was to try to keep everyone off my range and see how it turns out as a test. So I want to pause and talk about that because that's an interesting strategy. I mean, on the surface, I think that's weak, right?
Yeah.
Is you're giving up a lot of value by not doing that. But one of the things that we talk about often is you make the same action pre-flop so people can't put you on a hand, right? So if you have been doing that all night, like you said, and people are picking up on it, and that's the other key. If they're not picking up on it, it doesn't matter. But if they're picking up on it, then you're still not telegraphing the strength of your hand. That's really one of the more important things. So
I'd like to clarify, too. I think he means that he would limp under the gun when he says no matter what my hand was. I think he means if it was playable. I don't think he limped every time he was under the gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's,
Okay, I just want to make sure that was clear, so he's not just playing.
Say, yeah, I can't imagine that he's playing seven deuce.
Right, I was going to say, otherwise that's like every single hand he's wasting money then if he's playing every hand under the gun. But yeah, so whenever he played wanted to play a hand, then he was under the gun, no matter what he limped. So that's an interesting tactic. I never heard about, or I never heard of anyone doing that. You know, I mean, I heard of people doing the opposite, like every time they saw pocket aces, they shove no matter what or something like that, but in this case, that's interesting, and there's no way they can tell, even if they pick up on it, they don't know what he has for a hand, because he's playing a playable hand, it's just how playable is it? So, interesting tactic, I like it.
Let's see how it works out. So, of course, he limps for 50 cents, and it folds to the villain in the small blind, who raises to $2. Big blind folds, and is back to us.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, this person, you know, he's categorized as the villain because he's the person we're playing against. And it's funny, I always wonder when we call them villains and then they lose the hand, are they really villains or are they? Anyway, so I don't know if I'm going to raise again because I don't know what this player is really like. And it's only five-handed, so if he's raising for the first time after this limper and blinds are in the hand, I think he could have a hand and he could have us pipped a lot very easily. You know, you could easily have ace-jack or something like that, or even better. So, I don't feel like opening up the betting again is the right decision. We're going to have position on him, because even though we're under the gun, he was in the blinds. So, I think a call is warranted. I think we were going to raise to probably that $2 anyway, you and I. So, yeah. I believe a call is warranted, and then just investigate afterward the flop and see what he plays like.
Yeah, I wouldn't have limped, obviously, I would have raised, but now that we did limp, we're actually in a really good spot now, I think, because he's the one raising, he's out of position against us the entire rest of the hand, so there's no reason for us to get into a little one-upmanship here, I don't think. I'm going to go ahead and call here and keep my hand range still pretty quiet. I mean, obviously, he can range just because we're calling a $2 raise. But if we re-raise, now we're telling him we have a really good hand, and then we get popped again or something like that. So he's still going to have to do some guessing on us, I think.
And
we have the benefit of being in position. So
yeah.
All right. The flop is the ace of diamonds, six of diamonds, queen of diamonds, and the villain checks to us.
Man. Oh, I feel like we have to bet. I realize he could have just flopped, a flush, or he could have ace, what did you say, ace, six, queen. So he could have a queen or a six with his ace, too, so if he has an ace. But it is interesting that he checks to us after taking control of the hand. So that can also feel scary. But really, I think we really only have to be afraid of ace, queen. And I think that if somebody hit this flop pretty hard, they would have protected their hand. So I feel like they're afraid of the ace and the queen rather than hitting it and protecting against diamonds. The only hand now you could possibly be afraid of, I think, would be the made flush already. And even then, five-handed, he might bet out thinking, you know what, I'm never going to get value for this hand. This guy's going to, you know. So I feel like we're ahead and we have to protect our hand. We don't want a four-card flush getting there and screwing with our aces up. So I'm going to bet probably pot or close to it because I don't want this guy getting a free fourth diamond or a cheap fourth diamond. So I feel like we're ahead and we need to protect our hand.
Absolutely agree.
Oh, cool.
All right. So the pot's $5 and we bet $3.37. He says, I'm trying to feel him out and see if he may have hit a flush or a draw. And the villain calls.
Yeah. I mean, unless he's got like, you know, king, jack of diamonds. You know what I mean? It feels like he's scared of the ace and the queen, and he has a diamond in his hand. So he could have, like, pocket tens, you know, something like that with a ten of diamonds. Or, you know, that's why he called. Because if he didn't have any diamond, why is he calling? Unless he's got it, you know, just crippled. And I don't think he does. So I think on the turn, if it's a blank, I'm going to put the hammer down.
All right, turn is the eight of clubs. So our board now is ace of diamonds, six of diamonds, queen of diamonds, eight of clubs. And he checks to us.
Yeah, so this is where I put the hammer down. I mean, so the pot is, so 330, so 660 plus the original.
Oh, 12-ish.
How much? 12-ish? Yeah.
I'm sorry, 1174.
Yeah, so I'm betting pot again. I mean, I don't know if I'm shoving. I don't know how much this guy has in this not a really big game, but I'm at least betting pot again, I think.
Yes, it's covered in this. We are 156. He was at 165.
Yeah, so I'm not shoving, but it's not worth a shove. But I'm definitely betting like 12 to 15 here. I don't want this guy hitting that diamond.
Yeah, so, I mean, unless he's very sneakily playing that made flush, that's the next hand that he has is that naked diamond, right? Yeah. So definitely got a bet here, I think. So, all right. So, see, he says, I feel pretty good that he may have a flush draw, but decided he probably would check raise if he hit the flush on the flop. So I make a pot size bet of 1174, feeling pretty strong with my two pair. And if he was on a flush draw, I was going to try to make him pay to see the next card. The villain turns around and check raises me to 2910. So he says with 2340 currently pot, it will cost me an additional 1736 to call.
Well, the good thing is that we have outs if he already has the flush.
Yep.
So to me, to make a call, and the other good thing is we're in position. So we could just close the betting out here, call, and say, all right, you know, I'm going to see the river. An ace could come up, a six could come up, or he could be like, holy cow, this guy's got the draw, you know, or whatever, and who knows. And then on the river, you know, he'll check to us. So I like having position. I like only having to call. It was like $17 or so. So I think I'm going to call with my aces up still. I feel like this is weird. I don't know what a check. I mean, if he had, let's say he had the diamonds already, mm-hmm. Why is he raising us? Why wouldn't he call? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
So here's how that scenario would play out, I think. I do think this is that now I am concerned that he does have the made flush on the flop. So he checked to see whether we would take a stab at it, which we did. I mean, that's kind of smart, right? I mean, at that point, I mean, depending on what your flush is, I mean, if he has the nut flush, then he's not worried about anything, right? Mm. But if you have like the 7-8 of diamonds or something, you might be worried about you're worried about a fourth diamond coming, right? Rather than the other way around. But so let's assume he has a decent flush here. You check. We take a stab. All right, free money. And then we check again because we feel like he's going to come back at us one more time, and we did. So now, how do you make the most value out of it? Do you just call and then check the river and hope he makes a third stab, which doesn't always happen, right? Or do you check raise now and try to get him to commit some money if he does have that naked diamond trying to catch up? So I don't know. I mean, I would not be surprised if he turns over a made flush at the end of this hand.
Well, let's extend this thought a little more. So if you had a baby flush after that flop, okay, and you decide to take a chance and check, which, by the way, if you check there, you're giving the other person a free chance to hit a diamond higher than a seven, say. So I think you want value for your hand. I think you'd rather win the pot than lose the pot by not getting, you know what I mean? So, okay, yes. So even if he did check, okay, and then we bet out, and then you call, now on the turn, you have to remember that every player basically plays to protect against the four-card flush. So I read that as the villain, in reverse, us, we're betting that flop to protect against the fourth diamond. So if this person has two diamonds, he's got to think we don't have the diamond. And so on the turn, then he can check and then call again because he doesn't think we have the diamond. If he believes we have one of the diamonds, then he would have bet on the flop. You know what I mean? So it's just a weird way, a juxtaposition, really. So I would think that by that turn, a check raise means nothing because what changed in the situation here that he needs to check raise? I would call and then bet the river, and no matter what came, as long as it wasn't a diamond. Even if, because a diamond, then you're going to scare him, right?
That's right. I forgot you could bet. Yeah, you could bet there. That's another way of playing it. Yeah, that makes sense.
It just scares me to think that, you know, as a player, I mean, if I'm in that hand, that if I have the baby flush already, that I'm going to let this guy hit a fourth diamond and check both the streets. I can't imagine you having four, the baby diamonds, and checking the flop and the turn, thinking that a fourth diamond could hit. So I would think you'd bet a lot earlier than a check raise on the turn. So I don't think he has it.
Well, yeah, the other thing that makes me wonder now whether he has it or not is, I mean, I guess there's different psychology involved. I mean, I laid out one type of psychology on the flush that you check, hoping that we bite and bet into us, right?
Yes.
The other psychology, which I normally would use, is, you know, I was the aggressor in this hand, right? The small blind was.
Yeah.
And so I'm expected to c-bet, right? And so if I flop that flush, I'm going to c-bet and expect to get check raised, which is more money, right? So that's really the better way to play it, I think.
Well, he's in position, so he wouldn't be check raised. But I see what you're saying, right?
He's a small blind.
Oh, yeah. He bets first, so he's not check raised.
No, yeah. Right.
He'd be raised.
But if you bet out there as a c-bet, then you can also expect – frequently to get raised by
get
someone.
Raised. Right, get raised. Right.
Yeah, not check raised, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
raised.
Exactly. So you're expected, and it would look like you're protecting against the flush. You know what I mean? And you're supposed to bet there. So I just don't believe this guy has a baby flush. I think he doesn't believe us, and now he's making a move here and wants to see, you know, maybe he has that fourth diamond himself, and he's trying to get to the river for his price and then hope a diamond falls, and then, ha-ha, I've got this king-high flush that, you know. So I just don't think he has it. I think we're ahead.
All right. Let's see. Our here says, I'm starting to be a little worried, but still think that if he hit the flush, he would have raised on the flop after checking. Not sure how the turn has helped since he's putting me on a draw. Or maybe he has a set and doesn't want me to get a chance to hit the flush. I go ahead and call since I still feel there's a good chance I may be ahead and really want to see the river. Plus, by being in position, I can wait and see what he does on the river. And if something comes that I think may help him. All right, the river comes, the jack of hearts. So now the board is ace of diamonds, six of diamonds, queen of diamonds, eight of clubs, jack of hearts. And the villain shoves all in for $129.25. Yeah. And the current pot was $69.94.
Wow. Oh, it's going to take a while. I feel like, geez. I feel like this guy, why so much? And this isn't, right? And this isn't one of those, you know, oh, I've got the nuts. Because there's no way he had King 10 there unless he had the King of Diamonds. And if he had the King of Diamonds, I still feel like he would have bet, you know, on the flop. Because he's got the nut flush draw. He had control of the hand pre-flop. Why didn't he bet with a four-card flush? So I don't think it's King 10. Maybe it's a 10 of diamonds, and that's what he was. But that, why would he be so secure with a 10 of diamonds, you know, to play that? So obviously, I feel like this is a bluff. Like he has a piece of it, but not as good as two pair, not as, you know, aces up. So I'm gonna, call. I feel like there's no reason to bet that much, no matter what his hand is. I feel like it's a I can't win without betting hand. I don't see. This pot is not that big. You know what I mean? It's not that big to shove on the end there. He could have gotten away with a $30 bet, you know what I mean, or a $40 bet, you know. I mean, the pot was – what was the pot? So it was like 12 when we
– it's $69.94 right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, why would you double the size of the pot when a legitimate bet on the end, when you're looking for value, a legitimate bet there is like $20. It's like 30 maybe. Even if you bet pot.
And even beyond that, so if you, I mean, again, it's an effective strategy from time to time to overbet to make people go, why so much, and then, you know, lull them into a call. And if that's the case here, you could still do that with a pot size bet, $70. I mean, the whole 130 seems really ridiculous to me here. And if I make this call, which I'm going to, and lose, it's going to hurt because I have a lot of money, but it's a very, very odd bet to be making. So
plus, I'm not showing any aggression, really, in this hand. So there's no reason. If we were drawing, we didn't get there. So there's nothing to be worried about there. Why is this guy trying to intimidate me when I didn't do anything aggressive other than call his bets, really, and then make a small bet on the flop? Then you check raise me, and I called. I didn't, you know what I mean? So if I'm being sneaky, then no matter what bet you make, I'm going to call because I'm way ahead of you. And if I'm way behind, you know, the only way you could bet is win. So that's the only reason to make that bet. So I never gave him the impression that I was way ahead of him. So he's trying to force me out of this hand. I'm calling.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it just really does not smell right. So,
no.
Yeah. All right. Here it says, I have about 120 left. I will have to commit my entire amount to call. The good and bad part about this online game is there's a short timer to make a decision. You have the option to click on a button to give you an additional 15 seconds, but total you only have maybe 25 seconds max to make a decision or automatically fold you. I was feeling the pressure of the clock and trying to figure out what he had. I never really put him on the flush and still don't think he had it. But I could easily see him with a king, with king 10 and raising the $2 on the blind to try to either steal the blinds or get a smaller field of people to play against. I just didn't feel like risking all my money and going from behind, from being ahead to a little, to being down $100 or so. So I folded, figuring he had me with a straight for sure. He showed me his cards after I folded and that he had a jack 10 offsuit and he had put me on a flush draw with an offsuit ace. He thought for sure I had a pair of aces with a small diamond. I was trying to hit the flush. I told him I hit two pair with an ace and never put him on a flush, but figured he probably hit the straight on the river after betting so big. Looking back with more time to analyze, I finally see how the offsuit eight helped him. Jack 10, giving him an open-ended straight draw, and that is why he raised me on the turn. But that is still pretty risky. I will admit this hand threw off my game for about 20 minutes and ended up losing the rest of my money, having to buy back in for an additional $100 and getting to 160 by the end of the night. So overall, only down by 40, but I was just kicking myself for folding that overbet and not imagining he'd be bluffing with a small pair trying to get me off my hand when I raise on the flop and turn, only to have him semi-bluff on the river.
Yeah, you know, I don't fault the fold because of the time constraint. I mean, look how long it took us to come to our realization of it. You know what I mean? We were pretty quick with saying we were going to call, but we also, you know, had all of this time to analyze everything up to that point, which he didn't. And so I don't fault the fold. What I would say is the king 10, putting him on that hand, any kind of time, you could have come to that realization that he didn't have king 10 earlier. I know it gives him the straight draw on the turn, but with three diamonds out there, two of his outs are gone if he thinks you're on a draw. So I don't see this guy check raising with a straight draw when a flush is already possible. So the king 10 I would have ruled out. But then if you rule that out, you still have to wonder, am I losing to something else, which could have easily been. See, that's why playing online is difficult. If your brain isn't working at, you know, Sheldon Cooper speeds, you know, it's very difficult to do this. But if you have the time to do it, none of this makes sense, and you won this hand, obviously. You know, when you play this story over, we always talk about telling the story. The story this guy told you never adds up to king 10, unless it's king 10 of diamonds. And then we say, no, that doesn't add up either, because ultimately he would have bet somewhere along the way, and the check raise didn't make sense because he had the mortal nuts. So why not just call you and then make a smallish bet on the river? And then the other thing, too, is it, from what he said to you, that he believed that you might have been on a draw with a small dime, why is he betting 129 on the end anyway? If he believes, maybe because he knows that he has to bet because he can't beat your aces. That's what he's saying to you. And instead, it doesn't make sense that he thought you were on a diamond. You know what I mean? At the end, he should have value bet. A value bet is what gets made there when you have a straight, not a shove, because if you have the flush, he's losing. So it just doesn't make any sense. So that's why I called.
Yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah, interesting hand. And I tell you what, that home game has really provided some quality content for us.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
you know, if we had some quality pros on the show talking about it, we probably, you know, they probably could have been real quality content, not the stuff that we ruined. But still, different way of looking at it. And that's what we've always said on our show, is that we're just giving you a different perspective. It may not be the best perspective, but it's our perspective. And it's a shame that you folded, but... You know, I don't fault you for that clock ticking on you like that. That's the worst part about it. You know, in a real game, you get a full minute when they call a clock, and they won't even call a clock on you after until like 4 or 5 minutes. So,
well,
you know.
Let's be honest, too. I mean, part of the reason that play works for a lot of people is because players are risk-averse in poker. Not all of them. I mean, some are gamblers, right? But generally you are. And so, I mean, at that point, your mind gets scrambled, right? You're not really thinking about the hand anymore. You're thinking about... that you're going to lose a lot of money. I mean, that's a 25, 50 cent game, and you're going to lose your entire stack.
Yeah.
And then you start to think, and you're like, all right, when you get in with that 25 seconds, most of that 25 seconds is probably taken up with you worrying about losing your stack rather than actually strategically analyzing the hand, right? So so it is an effective play. But, you know, once you realize that it's happening, then maybe you eliminate that from the 25-second thought process and you make the call because it doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, there's a reason people like show. That's the big difference between no limit and limit. We've talked about this forever, right?
Yeah.
It's having that nuclear option of just, like, shoving and having people go, all right, I think I got you beat, but I don't want to lose my stack, so I'm going
to
fold.
Yeah, I used to work against my mom all the time. I used to play with my mom. I'd get at the end, and I knew I couldn't beat her. I'd say, I'm all in. She'd go, and she'd fold. Because she would think, oh, that meant everything, and she didn't really think about it long enough to realize, hey, I still have a really good hand here. I think it's good, and the only thing I'm going to lose here is my, you know, I have to deal or something, you know. But it would work every time, and some people are like that. They just are risk averse, and they don't like to be the first one out, or they don't like to lose their real money, their stack, so... Yep. I don't fault the fold, but I think if you're playing live, you give it a little more thinking, you would not have folded here if it happened in a brick and mortar place. So,
true.
Thanks for the hand. I appreciate it. Scott appreciates it, and we'll look forward to more hands coming out of there at some point. I'm Chris Cosenza,
and I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hey, Ante Up updates. The Papes, Ante Up fans free...
item.
Oh, that's right. Well, we talked about reopening, so it threw me off. I'll probably get that out of the show. If not, then a nice little Easter egg for you. Sorry about that.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.